Go. Welcome to Built to Go, a van life podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Wagg, coming to you from the College of Curiosity. This time it's episode 246, and we're going to talk about 10 van life myths. Not the top myths, just 10. Look, I just grabbed 10 of them, okay? I don't always have to get the top ones. We're also going to talk about LPG versus propane versus butane versus natural gas, a product review of a really comfortable way to sleep, and a tale from the road that is oh so very current. Hello everyone, thank you for joining me here once again. I'm sorry that I'm a day late, and that was by design because on Wednesday I knew I was visiting the doctor and I knew I could get off of the drugs that were making everything so foggy, and yeah, well, I'm still in a bit of a fog, but we're still going to have a podcast. Also, I'd like to apologize to the folks who listened last week and were appalled by the sound quality. Yeah, it was really bad. I made a huge error. I put on a very soft-sounding ambient sound, and unfortunately, the way the processors picked things up, it made it much louder than it actually was. And when you record that way, there's no way to fix it. It isn't a separate track that you can lower, and, well, I'm sorry. I will try not to do that again, although I am fairly happy I got the episode out at all because I was a zombie, and today I'm only a half zombie, so I'm going to try to do better. And before we continue, obviously the world is on fire. I recognize that. I have my own personal political beliefs that I'm going to try to keep off this channel, but I will tell you this. When it comes to place names, I'm going to stick more with internationally recognized place names than just a place name that somebody just decided that they wanted to do. And as far as who you are, what your identity is, you get to tell me and I get to believe you, and that is the end of that. I do not need to do any research to determine your identity. All you have to do is tell me, and I respect that, and that's the end of it. That's all. So, going forward, let's talk about 10 van life myths. And these are just some things that people tend to say a lot. I see this a lot on the internet. All these things come up over and over and over again. And you're going to get my opinions on these things. And I am not the authority of anything, really. I'm just a guy who has a lot of experience and who has done a bunch of stuff and has a unique perspective. So you could probably do this same list as 10 van life truths if you wanted to. But I would think you were wrong. And that would actually be okay. So, diving right in here, we'll start with this one. Lithium iron phosphate batteries are always the best. Now, you could interpret what I have said in the past as meaning that, and it is almost true. I almost didn't put this one on here because it's almost true, except almost true is also not true. If something's almost true, it isn't quite true, and that statement, as said, is not true. There are times where other chemistries of batteries are better. One very clear example of that is your starter battery. Your starter battery should be a lead acid battery, a traditional old-fashioned battery. And that's because that battery is designed to give up all of its power all at once to turn your engine on and then recharge quickly. And lithium batteries aren't built that way. Now, you could argue that if you had 400 amp hours of lithium battery with a 2C rate, or yeah, you could argue a whole bunch of things. Fact of the matter is, lead-acid batteries are the best way to have a starter motor. Now, there are AGM starter batteries, that's fine. Some of them call themselves hybrid. That chemistry is okay, too. Neither of those is lithium, though, and they're better for that application. The other one that makes sense to me is if you're in a cold weather situation where you're using your battery a lot and it's also going to be cold a lot, or if your battery is never going to be getting above freezing. The deal there is that lithium batteries cannot be charged if they're below freezing. It will damage the batteries. And yes, some of them have heaters now, but those heaters use power. In some cases, an AGM battery works better for, say, a small load usage, something where you're only going to need, say, lights or something like that. An AGM battery, maybe even just a little motorcycle-sized battery, could make more sense. That said, as far as leisure batteries go, in general, lithium iron phosphate batteries are the way to go, in my opinion. Number two, there's no such thing as stealth. Everybody knows you're in there. I feel like I've talked about this a lot, although someone recently asked me to talk about it again, and their issue was that there are different kinds of stealth. For example, there's stealth if you're in a suburban neighborhood, and then there's stealth if you're in an industrial area. A white box truck in an industrial area is more stealth than, say, a minivan in that area, although the minivan would fit much better in the suburban neighborhood. So what should you do? Well, you should figure out what you're going to do, and then do so accordingly. But to answer the myth of stealth is that stealth makes you invisible. Well, no, you're not going to be invisible. You're in a hunk of metal. You are going to be seen. The trick is that you want to be ignorable. You see vehicles all the time while you're driving, but you don't register them. I mean, if you think about it, think about the last time you drove anywhere. What were the kinds and types of cars around you? Most of them you can't remember because they weren't of note. There was nothing on there for you to latch onto. Now, if they had a funny license plate or a funny bumper sticker or they were a funny color or something like that, you're going to remember them. So stealth, in so far as it regards van life, is actually about being ignorable, about being plain, about having the outside of your vehicle look non-threatening and not rememberable. I think that's a word. It is now. And often that means having nothing that has words on it on the outside of your van. So it is not a myth. Stealth is a real concept, and if you're the kind of person who's traveling everywhere and sleeping in places where people might get upset that you're there, stealth is definitely something to think about. However, stealth is not more important than comfort, and you should not be sacrificing your comfort for stealth, in my opinion. Number three. Vinegar cleans everything. You don't need to use a lot of water. You just spray some vinegar on there and wipe the dish off, and you're done. Well, yeah, vinegar does help cut grease, and it can make dishes appear clean. But the fact of the matter is that vinegar is not a great disinfectant. It is not as good as soap. Soap lyses cells. Soap breaks cells apart. Soap is a much better way to clean dishes. Problem is, it uses a lot of water. Vinegar doesn't do that. It doesn't have that ability. So on things like frying pans and things that get super hot where it doesn't really matter all that much. I mean, honestly, if you have a seasoned cast iron pan, cleaning it is kind of optional. So long as it gets hot, that's the cleaning part. But yeah, vinegar can help with some of these pan things, but don't think they're sterile or anything like that. If somebody is sick or you're using some like for example, if you have a plastic plate and you cut chicken on it, don't just wash that off with vinegar. Absolutely not. You make sure you wash that off with soap, hot soap and water if you can, or bleach or something like that. The vinegar will not disinfect it. Don't believe me? Look it up. Number four. You should never have carpet in a van. I've heard this a lot. Carpet collects dust and things can live in it and it tends to smell over time and all that blah, blah, blah. Well, yeah, that is all true. However, I think you should have carpet in a van sometimes, but what I think you should have is a rug, a removable rug. What's the difference between carpet and rug? Well, there's a lot of definitions, but basically today what we're thinking of is carpet is wall-to-wall and permanently installed, and rugs are things you can remove. If you don't have a rug or some other thing like that in your van, the floor is going to be cold, it can be slippery, things are going to break more often as they fall on them, you're going to get more noise, etc., etc., etc. Rugs can provide a lot of comforting factors in your van. So if you like the idea of getting out of bed barefoot and stepping on a rug, go for it. Just make sure it's something that you can remove and clean. Also, if you're at the beach, yeah, sand in the rug is annoying, but it's not as annoying as sand on a hard floor. I mean, that's really annoying. And yeah, sure, you can sweep it out, but you can also just pull the rug out and shake it out too. So it's a little bit more work than just a bare floor, but if it adds comfort, as long as it's removable, it's fine. Number five, Reflectix is useless. Well, no, it's not useless. It's not as useful as some people think. Reflectix is the brand name for that aluminized bubble poppy stuff. Bubble wrap, that's the word I'm trying to think of. Aluminized bubble wrap. And people look at the package and they see these incredible R values and it's really thin and it's easy to work with and they think, I'm going to do my whole van in this and it's going to be great. And you know what? This is the part that people miss. They're probably right. If you do your whole van in Reflectix, it's probably going to be just fine. But you shouldn't think that you're getting these amazing R values out of it, because as soon as Reflectix touches something, all that R value is out the window. It's a radiant barrier. It stops radiant heat, not conductive heat. Conductive heat is when two things touch each other and the heat passes through. Reflectix can't do anything with that. If you have it up against a window where you have the sun's radiation coming through, it's very good at that, and no one disputes that. What is disputed is whether it's of any use on walls. It is a very poor insulation to use on walls, but it's not useless. My ambulance, made by a professional company, has Reflectix on the walls for insulation. Now, ambulances are a special case. They're always running. They always have a source of heat and cooling, so the insulation is really not very important. But if your only concern is you just want to keep the condensation down, if that's your biggest concern and you don't have a lot of space, yeah, Reflectix can actually work. And it especially works well on windows. It absolutely is wonderful for windows. So you don't have to hate Reflectix because it's not a really good insulation like, say, Thinsulate or Polyiso. You just have to know what it can do, and then see if you want what it can do. And what it can do is give you a little bit of insulation, which might just be enough to prevent condensation from forming on those kind of shoulder days. If you're going to be living in the Arctic in your van, you probably want to think more about the insulation than just Reflectix. Duct tape fixes everything! Yes, folks, it is actually duck, D-U-C-K, tape, not duct tape. But the reason is that it's a cloth. The cloth, the type of cloth, is called duck, and the adhesive is added to it, and that makes duct tape. Duct tape makes sense, you'd think, except that this stuff is lousy for ducks. If you try to use it on ducks, you'll find out that this tape is really no good. And honestly, in my opinion, duct tape is garbage. I don't use duct tape for anything because it really isn't very good at the things you'd want to use it for. It melts, it gets sticky, it's hard to remove, and I just don't like the stuff. There are much, much better tapes out there now, including Gorilla Tape or Gaffer's Tape or anything like that. Much, much better tapes, and they last much longer, and they're much easier to work with. There's a whole range of tapes based on what adhesive they use, and you should use the right one for the job. And in my opinion, duct tape isn't ever the right one for the job, or at least very rarely. LED lights are always better. No. Again, no. What are you doing with the light? If you're trying to illuminate the interior of your van, yeah, LED lights are pretty awesome. It's going to be hard to match them. They use a little tiny bit of power. They're small. They don't get hot. I mean, there's a lot going on there. I have a lot of reasons to recommend LED lights for the interior of the van. For the exterior of the van, for nighttime, absolutely. LED lights, great. You can pick what color you want. Wonderful. Inexpensive. Where don't I recommend LED lights? In the vehicle's equipped lights. The brake lights, the tail lights, the headlights, all those lights. The reason is that the vehicle was designed, if your vehicle, most vehicles are designed this way, not all, some are designed with LED lights in them, but if your vehicle was designed with incandescent light bulbs, for any of the safety lamps, you should keep using incandescent bulbs for those lamps. Because most modern vehicles have a circuit in there that detects resistance on those lights. And if one of them goes out, it'll give you a message on the dashboard saying, hey, that light's gone out. Well, if you put an LED light bulb in there, that sensor also thinks the light's out. The LED doesn't have the same resistance as an incandescent bulb. In a lot of vehicles, there's no way to turn this off. So if you think, oh, I'm going to be cool, I'm going to replace all my exterior safety lights with LED lights, you may end up with a permanent light on your dashboard, and then when your important lights go out, you won't even know. So, you shouldn't do that. If you're going to do that, if you want to try it first. Be prepared to undo it, because that can be a problem. The other place they're not so great is for headlights. You can go to any auto parts store and see all these crazy bright blue lights, whatever, and you see them driving down the road. Typically, those are not legal for road use. It's in little tiny print on the package, and I know you have seen people driving at you that you wonder why they have their high beams. I'm sorry, I'm in the Midwest. I'm supposed to say brights now. They're brights on. They don't. They're just using the wrong lights, so you have to be careful about that, too. So LED lights for everything except safety lights on your vehicle. The interior lights, even the ones that came with the vehicle, like the dome lights and stuff like that, yeah, go ahead and put LEDs in there, you'll be fine. So long as you're not driving, drinking in your van is just fine. I can answer this with one word. No. As far as the law is concerned, if you are near your vehicle with alcohol, you can be considered driving it. This varies all over the place. It's different laws in every community, every town, and everything. Even if you have an open bottle of alcohol in the vehicle, you can be considered drunk driving. It's a mess. It's really difficult to know what the deal is. So, the safest thing to do is to not have any alcohol in your vehicle, but that seems kind of unreasonable. Next safest thing to do is have only sealed alcohol in your vehicle. And then the last thing is make sure all the alcohol in the vehicle is where you can't get at it from the driver's seat. Most reasonable law enforcement, if they pulled you over, would see have you been drinking? And you can say no, and they say, but there's alcohol in the vehicle, and you can say, yes, that's for when we camp tonight. But even then, you could be breaking the law. So it isn't about drinking when you're driving or having drunk before you're driving. The laws are such that if there is alcohol near you and you are in control of the vehicle, which means that you could possibly drive it, you can be cited. And that's one of the difficulties of van life, is you don't actually have a domain like you do if you have a house. You can go in your house and drink all you want, and then, yeah, your keys are right there and your car is in the garage. What's the difference? Well, the difference is that there are laws protecting what you do in your house. The laws protecting what you do in your campground are much, much weaker, if existent at all. So be very cautious when drinking and your vehicle's involved. Number 9, I really want to do van life, but I have to have a shower every day. I hear that fairly often from people who haven't done van life before. And so many of them, if they have money, what they'll do is they'll build a shower into their van, which is fine. If that's something you really want, I'm certainly not going to stand in the way of it. But is it really worth that much to you? I mean, the amount of stuff you have to put in a van to have a shower, you have to eat up a giant piece of real estate. And sure, you can use it as a closet or whatever. I mean, you can do things around that. But then you need more water. You need more gray water capacity. You need hot water in most cases. It's a lot. And what I have found in all my years of doing RV and van life is that people just don't use the showers in their rigs that often. I don't know anybody who uses them daily. There probably are some people out there. I just have never met any. Most people will use one once a week, or if there's an emergency or something like that. And if you're using it at that frequency, I would say don't put a shower in your van. Find another way to stay clean. You can absolutely stay clean without having a shower every day. That's a modern thing. The shower every day thing is very, very modern. I don't know how old you are. I can tell you that my grandparents spent their entire lives without even owning a shower. And they lived in Boston. They weren't like out in the rural boonies or something. They just never had a shower. So there are other ways to keep clean, and most of those ways use less heat, less water. They're much more convenient for somebody living in a small space. So if you're the kind of person who thinks you need a shower every day, I'm going to invite you to not have a shower. You can do this at home. Just spend a weekend without having a shower. Find other ways to keep clean, and you might find that that actually works. And number 10, you should make your van as house-like as possible. Now, obviously, this is a huge personal preference thing. You know, people build their vans in different ways. I personally want my van to look like a spaceship in the inside. And I know that's a rare thing. Most people want their vans to be much more homey than I do. But it's my van. I'm going to do it the way I want. Some people want it to be, they just want it to be just like their home. Everything's the same. There's wallpaper, there's curtains, and all that. You don't have to do that. So a lot of the really fancy builds, you will see their goal is to make it more and more house-like. It's just like being at home. You'll see that. This luxury apartment in Manhattan actually has wheels. You know, you see headlines like that. But that isn't necessarily what you want. A house is good for being a house. It doesn't move. Vans move. And because of that, they're a different kind of thing than a house. And I suggest that they should be treated differently. you don't necessarily want a house on wheels. You want a place to sleep and cook and live on wheels. And that probably looks different than your house looks now. So that's a mindset thing. And I find that a lot of people who are just attracted to van life get so excited about these incredibly fancy builds with lots of fabrics and stuff on the counters and plants and live, love, learn written on the site, all that. I mean, you can have that if you want, but I really think you should consider that this is a vehicle, not just a house, and it has to do many things at once. Is that really a myth? I don't know. I just felt like throwing it in there, and heck, it's my podcast. I get to. So there's 10 myths for you. Agree or don't. It is all okay. If you have anything you'd like to say to me, you can find me at jeff@builttogo.com. That's 2 T's, not 3, not 1. Special thanks to Dave and Bruce for donating diesel to me while I have been less than productive these last few days. I absolutely appreciate the support. And Bruce, I know you were at VanFest and I couldn't be there this year, and I just regret it so much, but I mean, that's just the way it is. From the pictures, it looked like everyone had a good time. There was a nice liftoff there. You got to see a rocket go up. Yeah, hopefully next year, but man, thanks for the support. And Dave, you are always a delight, as are all the people who support the show every month. If you are in any way struggling financially, please do not support this show. This is a luxury item. Supporting the show is for folks who have some extra money and want to support the show. So if you are in any way struggling, please listen with my compliments and do not worry about supporting the show. But for the rest of... No, I'm kidding. If you would actually like to support, you can visit buymeacoffee.com/builttogo and buy me a gallon of diesel, and I will appreciate it. Thank you. Also, that means no ads. Ads are bad. Van life news. Yeah, no news this week. Sorry. I've had enough of news for a while. We're just going to skip that part entirely. Tech Talk. LPG versus propane versus butane versus natural gas. What are all these things? I was recently involved in a discussion with some European folks. I think they're from the UK, and they want to come to the US with their van, which you can do. It costs like $4,000 to ship it over, and it's a bunch of hassles and stuff, but you can do it. Their concern was they don't know how to fill up their gas tank. And I don't mean their petrol tank. I mean their burnable gas tank that they use for heat and cooking and hot water and stuff like that. And there were a bunch of people trying to help out, but they were all Europeans and they were giving out all kinds of crazy information. So I did a little bit of research and looked into the different kinds of cooking gas, we'll call it. And in the U.S., I can explain completely what the situation is. So in the U.S., all RVs pretty much use LPG, which is liquefied petroleum gas. That's what it's called. It is in these white 20-pound cans. They don't weigh 20 pounds. They hold 20 pounds of propane. That these little squat white bottles, they're steel, and they go underneath gas grills. You'll see them all the time. Or they go in the front of trailers, or sometimes in the RV with a cabinet, or sometimes they're mounted in tanks under the RV. And that stuff, LPG, liquefied petroleum gas, is 80% butane and 20% propane. 80% butane, 20% propane. The problem is that in the U.S., most people call that stuff propane. I have to go get a new propane tank. You'll hear that all the time. It's not propane. It's mostly butane, actually, and it's really LPG. So there's some confusion there. In the U.S., I don't know a way to buy pure propane other than going to a plumbing supply store where they sell things like MAP gas and acetylene and things like that. But it's not what people are using in their RVs. So the question came up, will the people in Europe need to change their jets, like the jets in their cooking appliances, to burn the gas we have here in the U.S.? And I can't answer that authoritatively, but I don't think so, because from my research, the size of the jets that you use to cook propane LPG with, you know, normal propane LPG camping stuff, it's the same as for butane. In fact, you can buy stoves. I have one, a gas one stove that uses either propane or butane, and I don't have to change a thing. So I think that if you bring your van over from Europe, you simply need to fit a propane tank in there somehow, and all your appliances will work just fine, I think. Now, there's two other kind of gas situations we need to talk about. The other is butane. You can buy pure butane in the U.S., and this is what is used for things like jet boils and Mr. Buddy heaters and things like that. It's usually in these portable canisters, and it's never used in bulk in any RV or camper van I've ever seen. I don't know a place to go buy bulk butane. I only know you can buy the little cans, and that is used all the time. But again, that's for portable things. And then, of course, there's natural gas. Natural gas, which is what is piped into people's houses, is mostly methane, or as they say in the UK, methane. That's a totally different animal. You'll never find it in an RV. You might find it in a mobile home. And the reason is that it does require you to change the size of your jets. If you buy a range from Home Depot, say, and put it in your van, it isn't going to work unless you change the jets. Now, most of these stoves actually come with two sets of jets, and there is a propane, in quotes, set in there. And in fact, when I lived in Vermont, we couldn't get natural gas, but we could get a giant LPG bottle, and that's what we used for the house, and someone came down and filled it up every once in a while, and that made us change the jets in our dryers, in our furnace, and in our stove, and it worked just fine. But that's the case where you need to change those. So, in short, if you are buying an appliance for your rig, make sure it has jets for LPG or propane, as it is commonly called. If you're coming over from another country, you're probably fine. You just have to find a way to refill your existing tank, which might need adapters, and you guys are used to adapters because every European country has a different gas adapter for some reason. Or you need to find an adapter so you can just put in another tank. I think I've said too much about this, but maybe not. But that's what I know. Product review. Just before I had my ankle all hacked up, I got contacted by a company called Elegear, E-L-E-G-E-A-R, and they wanted me to test out one of their camping pads. And I'm like, yeah, okay, you know, my deal is that send me the item, and if you allow me to give an honest review, I will give an honest review, and that's it. I reject probably 9 out of every 10 items I'm offered because most of them have games where they want me to buy the thing on Amazon and then they'll reimburse me if I give 5 stars, and I'm not playing any of those games. If anybody wants to send me anything to test, I'm happy to do it. All you have to do is send me the thing and I will do it, and that's that. Elegear played ball. I negotiated with them a little bit and they agreed, yes, they will send me one of their pads. I will try it out, and I will make a review, and I'm going to make a YouTube review for it soon. I haven't done that yet. So I'm going to do the podcast review with you right now, and I have to say, well, I like this thing. I really actually do. They didn't have to play any of the games. If I had bought this thing, I would have been thrilled with it and done it anyway. This is a self-inflating camping pad, and if you've seen these things, they're usually a piece of foam that's encased in some sort of nylon or plastic or something. And when you roll them up, it pushes the air out, and then you close a valve, and it creates a vacuum, and the thing stays rolled up, and it's as small as it can be. And then when you want to use it, you unroll it, and then open the valves, and the foam pushes the plastic or nylon apart and inflates it. And then when you get it to the right level of inflation, you close the valves, and voila, you have a comfortable place to sleep. Now, I have used these before. I used to use them all the time when I had the tent trailer that I towed with the smart car, and they were okay. They worked, you know, it was better than sleeping on the hard ground, but I often found that the foam was kind of weak, and that for me, at my weight, I needed to inflate them a little bit more, so they would self-inflate, but I'd still have to open the valve and blow some in there to get it where I wanted, and I wasn't thrilled with them. However, the Elegear, this thing is just downright comfortable. Rather than just having a piece of foam in there, it's a piece of memory foam. And that is a game changer. This thing, it's the foam that supports you, and the air just adds a little bit of support. Whereas the other ones, the air is doing all the work. It's a completely different level of comfort than you can get from the old style ones. And it's the right size for me. I'm 6 feet tall. I'm pretty broad shoulders. I laid on this thing in the back of my truck, which is not built out yet, and sat there, and I was like, I don't want to get up. This is very, very comfortable. And I think it's going to follow me around. Whatever vehicle I'm driving that I'm sleeping in, this thing's going to come with me. I love it. I do. I think it's great. It has a series of valves that let you do different things. You can inflate it more if you want to. I don't know why you'd want to. I think it's plenty comfy the way it is. It has a valve that'll dump all the air out that makes it easier to roll up. And it comes with a carrying bag. The good news is that right now on Amazon, it's only $69, which I think is a pretty good deal. Normally, it's about $79, I think, which I also think is a fairly decent deal. If you are looking for a comfortable sleeping pad that you can put away during the day, this is a great solution. Now, what are the cons of this? Well, it's big. This is not something you would go hiking with. You roll it up, but it's still pretty big. It's a little longer than a sleeping bag and not quite as thick as a sleeping bag, but it's pretty big. You're still going to need a place to put this. Now, you could use it as a bolster or whatever. If you have a situation like I do where I have basically a couch that folds into a bed, I might just leave it on the couch and it'll act as a bolster. I think that'll work just fine. But if you're in a really tight situation, like let's say you're in an NV200 and you have to put the bed away every night, this is actually going to be a problem to find a place to store it. But if you're in a truck camper or something like that, or you're going to be car camping, yeah, this is, if space isn't really an issue, this is a super easy way to ensure a comfortable night. You can put it on a cot, you can put your sleeping bag right on top of it, and just be comfortable and not even have to worry about it. So, I like it. It's the first time I've tried one that's like this. If you've used self-inflating pads before, I think these newer ones are worth a look, and this one that Eligear sent, I think, is a pretty good product. So, I'm happy to recommend this. I thank Eligear for sending it to me and allowing me to promote it. I don't have any codes or anything like that. I'll have a link in the show notes to the Amazon deal that I just saw, but that's it. So it's not like you have to buy from me or anything. It's a nice thing. I like it. Tales from the road. So this is a tale that's actually happening right now as I'm sitting here. This whole time, since I had the surgery on January 27th, I've been sitting here wondering about what would this be like if I were living in the van full time. So my situation is, you know, I could tell you all about the complicated surgery and all that. Skip all that. Pretend I have a broken ankle, because that actually works really well. I have the same things you would expect as if you had a broken ankle. I can't put weight on it. It's going to take a long time for it to heal. I have to use a little knee scooter thing to get around, all that stuff. So that's my situation. Can't drive, can't walk. And let's say I'm living in a van full time. What would that be like? Well, I think it's doable. I think it would be difficult. In some ways, it would actually be easier. Even in my NV200, which was obviously a much smaller van, I designed it such that if I'm sitting on the seat that turned into a bed at night, I have access to everything. Like just sitting in that seat, I could reach everything. I could reach the sink, I could reach the fridge, I could cook meals while I was sitting. I mean, literally everything I needed to do, I could do while I was just sitting there. And that would actually be better than my current situation where I have to get up out of the chair and wheel around the floor and try to navigate the stuff on the, you know, it's a big pain in the butt. So in that sense, it would actually be easier. And in my ambulance, which is a 144-inch wheelbase Mercedes Sprinter, high top, you know, a lot more space, it would be a little more difficult because the way that's designed, you have to pull drawers open from under the couch, and I don't know exactly how I would do that, but it could be done. The tricky things are, well, honestly, there's one big tricky thing, and this has been the hardest part of this whole thing for me, and that is, as the medical terminology puts it, toileting. So it turns out that if you have a broken ankle, it's really difficult to get on and get off of a toilet. I'm learning this firsthand. And that problem is always a problem in vans. I mean, if you're, no matter what, it's you're generally not dealing with like a normal household toilet. It can be difficult. And I think I would hope that if I were in a van and I knew I was having the surgery, I would spend a lot of time practicing all these things I needed to do to try to figure out how I was going to do them. And I might have to alter the toilet somehow. But this is the killer. This is the real problem with being injured like this and living in a van. if anything goes wrong, if you need to do any kind of maintenance, if you need to empty that toilet or get more water or anything like that, you're kind of screwed. And honestly, I don't know that a solo van life person could last very long in a van with a broken ankle. Think about how much work it would be to get 6 gallons of water in a jerry can. Now, I mean, my little knee thing has a little tiny basket, but I've got no way to tow 6 gallons of water with it. And standing up and sitting down is actually a little bit difficult. Or if there's a problem with the electrical, I mean, there's just so many things that could go wrong. And I can tell you that even living in my comfortable condominium here, if my wife wasn't here, this would be really, really difficult. So I give you this tale just as food for thought. If you're going to live out there on your own, by yourself, you should probably make some sort of arrangement for if you need to have surgery or whatever. You don't know. You could break your ankle at any moment. You know, you step wrong, you got a broken ankle. That's how my problem started. I stepped wrong. That's all it was. Think about that. Going forward, what is your safety net? And if you find out that you're going to have surgery, make some calls, pull in some favors, make sure you have that safety net, because let me just tell you this. I have already fallen on my face once, and that was by myself, and that was no fun. Okay? If I were in my van in the woods and this had happened, it would have been a lot less fun. So word to the wise, make sure you have some sort of safety net. As much as you want to be a rugged individualist like I do, there are times you need other people. A place to visit. We're going to go visit an island. It's called Kelly's Island, and it is in Ohio. Yes, Ohio is not the place you think of when you think of islands, but in fact, Ohio's northern coast is a coast. There's a great big lake up there. Ohio has beaches. No, it's true. And apparently Ohio has become sort of a slang derogatory term, whatever. They have this island. It's called Kelly's Island. It's kind of a cool, ritzy kind of area. Think of it as like a little Mackinac Island, very, very little Mackinac Island. They have a ferry that goes across. And there's a campground on the island. You can take your van there, and you'll be out in the middle of Lake Erie, and it'll be beautiful, and there's all that. That's plenty of reason to visit Kelly's Island. But they've got a feature there that's actually almost unique, but pretty cool. And it's called Glacial Grooves. Now, if we go back tens of thousands of years, remember there was this thing called the Ice Age, and the glaciers came down and the glaciers retreated, except that isn't really true. The glaciers didn't retreat, they just melted. But on their way down, they picked up all kinds of stuff, rocks and just everything, because remember, glaciers were miles high. I mean, you're talking miles high of ice scouring the entire landscape. And this is when the Great Lakes were created, and that's where this island is. And on the island, there is bedrock that's exposed that has been scoured by the glaciers, or more accurately, scoured by things that were stuck in the glaciers, like massive house-sized boulders. And so exposed today in this park, you can go see these massive grooves cut into the bedrock. It really looks man-made, if you know what I mean. It really looks like somebody carved this out. It's this big, smooth gouge. It's just a big gouge cut in the earth. And it makes you feel so small when you look at it. Now, I haven't actually been there. It's added to my long, long bucket list. But I've seen pictures of people standing there, and they're just little tiny people, and they've got this giant groove there, and you can just imagine how much force it took to cause this and how much heat must have been generated. And it's completely smooth. It's like it's polished, all because of the force of glaciers sliding down across Ohio and down all the way halfway across the continental United States. Yeah, it's impressive stuff. And, you know, heck, it's Ohio. You know, I got to give Ohio a break every now and then. And this is the break. Kelly's Island is a cool place. I think you should go visit it when you get the chance. Be a great place to visit in the summer. I'm sure the campground fills up pretty quickly because out there in the lake, it's going to be a lot cooler. But, yeah, if you want to see a really cool geologic feature, mostly on the east coast of the U.S. I have to say that living in New England, we did not think of Ohio as the east coast, but people in Chicago also don't think it's in the Midwest. So, yeah, it's in Ohio. Ohio is its own place. Let's just say that. Anyway, I have a link in the show notes. Go ahead and look at the link just to see the pictures of this thing. It's pretty cool. And if you're in the area, it's probably worth a visit. Resource recommendation. This, I don't know if this counts as a resource. This is purely for entertainment. There's this guy who makes these videos on YouTube and shorts. I think he's on TikTok and stuff. He's all over the place. It's called Wheelie Yellow. Wheelie with an IE, W-E-E-L-I-E, yellow. And the guy built out a van, and he drives it all over the place. But the gimmick here is that the van is about the size of a loaf of bread, and it's an RC car. And he has this little guy that sits in the van, and that's Wheelie Yellow, that's the guy. And he goes off and has these adventures. And the way he drives this thing and the way it's built, It's just entertaining to watch. It's British humor. You have to like Monty Python kind of a thing to appreciate this, but I think it's delightful, and I'm really, really ready to find some more delightful things right now. So I'm going to present this to you. It is called Wheelie Yellow. It's on YouTube. Just search for Wheelie Yellow. I'll also have a link in the show notes. And just watch a couple of them. They're only a few minutes long. And if they make you laugh, great. And if they don't, go find something else. Well, folks, thank you very much for sticking with me here for episode 246. Music, as always, is by Simon Wagg. I have more news coming later, but for now, I'm really happy just to have been able to make this episode, and thank you for the support. Until next time, remember the words of Andrew Carnegie, who said, "There is little success where there is little laughter."